When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Episode 7 of Goosebumps is over, but we're just getting started here on post-show recaps. I'm here, your host, Melissa, with my co-host, the king of all horror. It's Todd. Todd, do you have goosebumps? Did this episode give you goosebumps?
I think it made me a little slap happy, if nothing else. But
yeah, I gotta say, this is maybe the least scary episode we've had so far.
Oh, yes, most definitely. There was not a whole lot of scary stuff going on. Like, there's like maybe one scene that's kind of creepy, but overall, not a lot of really scary horror stuff there. This is feels like very much a table-setting episode, I feel like, in some ways. Just getting things ready to move to the last act. I mean, you had like a couple of bits of action in here, so it wasn't like a complete nothing burger of an episode. But yeah, in terms of like scary stuff, just not a whole lot.
Yeah, I think that makes sense with three episodes left in the season that, yeah, this is kind of the build up to that kind of final confrontation and everything that we're going to get in the next episode, which I think, looking at some of the even just like the names of these last three episodes, which we'll get to in our predictions, I think like, okay, there's going to be some action coming in here. Like, I think that we are definitely getting to that point in the season. So yeah, you're right. Definitely a bit of a, okay, let's see where we go. Everybody is going to like, all of the information is going to get out. Everybody is going to be on the same page as we head into the final three episodes.
Except for Victoria.
Yeah. We're going to, yeah, it's very funny. Also, we're not going to see Sarah anywhere in this episode, which was not at all what I expected.
Yeah. We did see her name briefly on a cell phone as Nora refused to take her call, but that was the only sign of Sarah in the episode.
Oh, that's funny. I totally even missed that. So I saw her like in Harold's notebook as where we've seen her before, and that was it. So, but yeah, let's get into talking about this episode. I think that overall, I was reflecting on it earlier that I'm like really happy with how the show has turned out. It's always one of those where you don't really know before you cover a show how it's going to be. And I was reflecting, I'm like, I'm really happy we're covering the show. I'm really happy because I'm not sure that I would have watched it if we weren't covering it, to be honest, because I'm not the target demographic. So yeah, I'm just like grateful for the podcast today as I was like watching the show and enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm glad you've been enjoying it. Like we've talked about before, whenever I first met you were my co-host, I was like, well, I hope it's not too much for Melissa, but I think I don't know a lot of people who are watching it, unfortunately. I don't know. No, but we have a few people in the Discord who have been watching along with us. Not a lot who have been coming along, but a few. But at least one of them, Jinkers, who originally had said they weren't sure who the show was for. They were the ones that asked the question. But then they posted that their girls have gone from being upset at being behind to being upset that they're caught up and they can't watch until the next Friday. So if nothing else, we have a few people who are also enjoying the ride so far.
Yeah, that's great. There's definitely been a bit of conversation as I think this is going to be one of those shows that like as we get into Halloween weekend, people might just like binge the episodes that are available, right? And it's like, okay, you've got 8 episodes of this show and you're going to watch it all kind of on a spooky Halloween night. I think that it's really perfectly set up for that. So I wouldn't be surprised if more people get on board at this point, but there is like already a bit of conversation happening around it. I know our friend Catherine in the Discord was also talking about it and, you know, kind of in commenting along as she was watching it. So there's a bit of conversation out there. If you're watching this show, feel free to reach out to us either in the Discord or on Twitter. We've got Librarian Todd, MelissaW28. Let us know if you're watching it, because I think that, yeah, I think it's one of those that like this show might be a bit underrated. It's like a pretty fun show.
Yeah, I've definitely been enjoying it. So let's go ahead and dive into this episode, which is season 1, episode 7, Give Yourself Goosebumps. We open on a replay of the closing moments of the previous episode with Nathan ranting and then revealing himself to be Harold. He tells them it's time to get Slappy back and disappears. The gang tries to leave and discover the door outside leads to an endless void instead. They realize they're actually inside the scrapbook. We even have a shot of their bodies sitting in the house with their eyes all black like Margo's had been. They debate whether their parents will realize that they're missing, and we then cut to Nathan sending texts to all the parents so that they won't know anything is going on.
I was so convinced that Isabella's mom was going to get that text and be like, something is wrong. This doesn't sound like my daughter. Because he was being so weird about it. I was like, what teenager talks like this? What human being talks like this? But let alone what teenager talks like this, sending spaghetti emojis. And I was like, no. This is going to get him found out. And it apparently did not. She seemed fine.
Yeah, I had the exact same thought. I thought there's no way this does not sound like it comes from Isabella, even remotely, or at least not the Isabella that we've come to know since she had her whole haunted mask issue. Now, maybe this is close to what Isabella sounded like to her mom beforehand. Maybe her mom was like, oh, I got my old Isabella back. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. But yeah, as he was like dictating that to himself, I'm like, there's no way. There is no way Victoria's going to fall for that. But I guess Victoria's too busy trying to drug Nora and trying to be, you know, live her life in denial to understand what's going on with her daughter right now.
Yeah, the very slow realization of the adults this episode of like, wait, maybe Nora had a point. It's like, okay, come on.
Yeah. Speaking of, the next scene is Nora checking herself out of the psychiatric ward and confronting Victoria about drugging her. And, even like kind of threatening to, because Victoria tries to defend herself and Nora threatens to get her lawyer involved. And the look on Victoria's face makes you go, oh no, Victoria was definitely giving her drugs that she was not supposed to be giving her. Victoria says, don't get carried away. And Nora says, if now isn't a good time to get carried away when a ghost is trying to kill her children, then what time is? And that she's just going to trust her own instincts, which she should have started doing a long time ago. And as she's leaving, she bumps into Nathan in the elevator, who says he's been looking for her because of a mutual friend. She then sees Harold's reflection in the elevator doors, and she runs away. Good thinking, Nora. Trust that instinct to run away from possessed Nathan.
Yeah. I mean, okay. First of all, there's so many things happening. First of all, to shout out to the whole like scrapbook scene, them all with like the black eyes and stuff was actually super freaky. But since when does drawing in the scrapbook trap you in the scrapbook, because we've seen Harold draw pictures of himself. We've seen pictures, him like putting pictures of his classmates in there, although I guess he didn't draw them maybe, but like, this feels like kind of, I don't know. I would have appreciated in the scrapbook episodes any sort of indication that it worked this way, because I feel like we did a whole thing where Margot was like had to be in the location that was in there, and then now suddenly it's like, oh, it's not actually location based in this case, now it's like you just get drawn in.
Yeah, I agree, that was a little bit of a leap. I mean, it was like the pages I went to, there were drawings of the locations but not necessarily drawings of the people. I think the big question is, at what point did they get trapped in the scrapbook? We don't really know like when it transitioned from reality to in the scrapbook. Like, were they actually still in the scrapbook whenever Nathan came out and said he would like tell them they thought they were out of the scrapbook, but they actually still inside the scrapbook and everything came out and told them to come inside? More than likely, everything that happened in the last episode was actually them in the scrapbook. But I agree, it's a little odd that they suddenly have this thing about them having to be drawn in the scrapbook for them to be trapped. That does seem like not quite the rules that we saw before.
Yeah. And then, yeah, this moment, this whole like drug story thing makes not that much sense to me. It's a bit wild to me that Isabella would be like drugging Nora to like sedate her while in a hospital, despite everything that's going on. Like, I don't know, the amount of like basically like medical malpractice going on here, allegedly, to like keep the story under wraps, I don't really get why she would go to such lengths to like stop Nora from doing whatever she was doing. I guess we'll find out, and I guess she thinks that she's like stopping Nora from confessing to this like murder that they all committed, but it still seems a bit wild to me. And then on top of that, the whole where she's like, I'm gonna start trusting my instincts, and part of me, I again suspected that Isabella was gonna be like, yeah, do you know what instinct I've had lately? The instinct that text message was not from my daughter. And so I was totally expecting that to also be the lead-in for Isabella to be like, something's up with these kids. Not at all. She's still clueless.
And it's Victoria, not Isabella. Isabella's mom. I guess my thought is Victoria's whole thought process is that Nora's going to crack and is going to confess to what they did to Harold, and then they're all going to get, you know, thrown in jail. And so I guess she's like, okay, if I might have to break some more laws, but it's in aid of keeping my previous crimes from coming out. And I know Victoria does strike me as that super pragmatic person who would weigh the pros and cons, think, well, this is more likely to keep things, even if I'm breaking the law, it's in aid of, you know, keeping me out of jail for this other thing and less likely to get caught or whatever. So it makes sense to me, just from everything we've seen about Victoria, she seems to be the person who is willing to just like do things because she believes them and not because there is any other thing backing it up. So I agree, it's a little much, but Victoria's a little much, so I kind of buy it.
Yeah, I guess I'm just thinking of like how psychiatric hospitals work and the amount of paperwork you would have to be faking and like filling out incorrectly, and like the amount of just how strange it would be that she could get away with this and no one would notice that Nora like didn't belong there and was just getting like sedative drugs. So whatever, it's fine. And then this whole like she's being discharged seemingly against Victoria's will. So all of this was just like from my own like having worked in psychiatric hospitals. I was like, none of this is how it works. I don't understand, but it's fine. It serves the purpose of the story. I can let this go. What I have a harder time letting go is when a woman running out of an elevator screaming, stay away from me, to a man behind him, and everybody just sort of like lets them go. I was like, nope, no one wants to help. No one's going to try to like stop. Oh my gosh, why am I forgetting? His name's not actually Harold, but you know, Harold.
Yeah.
From chasing after her. I was just like very confused at how nobody seemed at all surprised that she was saying this and running away. And part of me is like, is it because they're in a psychiatric hospital? But I was like, but then they should be chasing down Nora if they think Nora is like some escaping patient or something. I was like, no, it's nothing.
Yeah, I think they just all recognized Nora and went, oh, it's just Nora. I think that's probably it. That seems to be like the town attitude towards Nora just seems to be, oh, spooky Nora, weird Nora. So I don't know. I agree that it was a little odd that she like went running out screaming and we didn't see anyone really try to do anything. But we also cut away from that pretty quickly after she ran away. So we don't know what Nathan did in that moment. But yeah. But after Nora runs away from him, she goes back to her shed where she gathers a bag of slappy parts and then Colin shows up. Surprised that she got out without telling him. She apologizes, then she says she has a few things to take care of. When he asks about it, she says she can't talk about it. He's upset, understandably so, saying that his marriage just broke up because of secrets and he can't do it again. And Nora says sorry and drives off, leaving him alone to take care of her fig trees, which he is going to take care of because it's not the tree's fault that she's keeping secrets from him.
Yeah, Colin... MVP of the episode. He was so, so funny. Todd, did you love this? This felt like I was watching this and I was like, I feel like Todd is getting as much of a kick out of this as I am.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good. His later scene, basically the end tag on his later scene with Ben is like one of my favorite moments of the episode. Yeah. I feel for Colin here because he's been through the ringer with his last relationship. And then now his new relationship has just been released from the psychiatric hospital. And is now carting around a duffel bag full of doll parts, which he can see, and refusing to tell him what's going on, not even going to call her son, who he's been watching and taking care of or trying to. It's a lot. It's a lot for him. And it's funny, she's like, everyone has secrets. Like, I don't. I have no secrets. You're my only secret. I'm like, well, it's nice for you that you have no secrets, Colin. It's like... Yeah, I think the rest of the world probably does have some, but that is the reason that Margo wanted to go to him in the first place, because she thought that he didn't have any secrets. That he did, but that secret's out now, and it's Nora, and she's driving away from him, leaving him with her fig trees.
Yeah, first of all, I love the idea of he's like, how are we going to celebrate you getting out of the psychiatric hospital? I don't know, a couple's massage? I was like, you know what? There are worse things you could do. I'm like a pretty big fan of this idea, but I thought that was very funny. And then, yeah, this like, don't come back until you're ready to talk. Like, it seems like at first he was going to be like, don't come back. And then he like couldn't even hold firm to that. He's like, but, you know, if you wanted to talk about your secrets, then like, yeah, totally. We can talk. That's fine. I'm still here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the fig tree line was so good. Not your fig tree's fault, so I will water your plant.
Yeah. Oh, Colin. Well, we then go back inside the scrapbook, and the gang realizes their parents aren't coming to help them. Margo proposes exploring the house, and James points out that it's Margo's exploring that got them into trouble in the first place. Isaiah defends her, but then also backs up James's point because bros before homies, as James, you know, so skillfully backpedals during his commenting on that. Oh my goodness. But yeah, I think it's funny because at first Isaiah's like, hey, it's not her fault. It's our parents' fault for getting this all started. But also, Margaret, we told you not to do it. And she's like, wait a second. You were just defending me. Like, I appreciate someone who can see both sides and point out the flaws in both arguments. You know, some people call it fence sitting. I call it being, you know, fair and balanced.
Yeah, this is a subtweet for Adam, who will never listen to this podcast.
Very much so.
Yeah. I loved that it sounded like the real world was playing in the background of this scene. My subtitles picked up on it, which I thought was funny. I was like, Harold is firmly stuck in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to hear and it was also kind of cycling through the intro. We got to hear, because Isaiah's like flipping through TV channels, because at the first they're all like in different parts of the house or the room they're in, kind of like Margo keeps opening up the drapes to look outside and there's just blackness. James is over by the cuckoo clock and Isaiah is like flipping the TV channels on every channel. It's just the real world. True story, you know, it's like you can tell exactly which season it is too because of that. So yeah, that was pretty funny.
I never watched The Real World. I think I was like maybe slightly too young, Because I wasn't actually a teen in the 90s for the most part. So, yeah.
Yeah, I watched it for quite a few years. It was like very much, especially whenever I first started college, like it was like something we would watch in the dorms and like the communal TV, it would be on. So watched it for quite a few years before I finally fell out of it.
Yeah. We're going to get into this in the next scene, but I just had to shout it out now. You can tell Nora lives in the Pacific Northwest because she drives a Subaru. That was very funny. I was like, yep, the Treks, they did a good job there.
So we do get a quick shot of Nora as she's driving out of town. She tries to call Lucas and leaves him a voicemail. And then we see that she's being tailed by Nathan. Mm-hmm. Then we go back to the scrapbook and the gang hears a noise in the dining room and they all grab household items to use as weapons. And they're all sort of around debating how to proceed. Do we go on three or after three type thing? And then Nathan walks in and they rush at him and he yells from the stop because he claims he's the real brat, not Biddle Brat. And I think that's how I'm going to refer to a possessed Nathan from near here on and is Biddle Brat, because I really like that.
That's great. Yeah. I love the line of, I think it's James, who's like, why are you all holding things? As they all like randomly grab items to defend themselves. And then as Lucas is like brandishing the deer antlers and Margo's just like holding up a lamp. And I was like, what are you going to do with that?
Yeah, yeah, their choice of weapons, maybe not the best, but I don't think they had a lot of options either. But but Lucas with the taxidermied head was my favorite of the weapons. I think he could do quite a bit of damage to those antlers. So I think he was like probably top of the pack in terms of choosing things there.
Absolutely.
So then we get to the scene I referenced a little while ago where Colin goes over to Ben's house to ask for some relationship advice, because he says Nora's been acting really weird, not her normal weird, and he asks Ben if there's something from Nora's past he should know about, since they've known each other forever. It's like some repressed memory get, you know, unleashed. And he asks, did you guys run over a doll or something in high school? And mentions the duffel bag of doll parts, at which Ben immediately gets up and drives away. And Colin's left alone in Ben's home, starts to wonder, is it me? No, it's them. It's definitely them. Which, just the line read on that is so good. But yeah, it's just like, Ben just like leaves, like not even Ben's like, where'd Nora go? I don't know. And Ben just leaves, and Colin just sitting in Ben's house at Ben's table with the door still wide open. You can still see like outside. Ben didn't even bother shutting the door behind him. And Colin's like, I'm starting to think it's me. No, it's them. It's definitely them.
Yeah, I know. This was funny. And yeah, he was trying to talk about how it's like totes cool. And I was like, I don't know, Colin. I don't think it's totes cool. yeah. But I loved it. And he's talking about, you know, he's a guidance counselor. He's got a bunch of feelings. He's trying to figure out the situation. So he's going to go talk to somebody. He's going to go ask for help. And I really loved that. And I thought the dynamic between these two was very funny.
Yeah. I also like, so he goes to talk to Ben about relationship stuff and Ben's like, oh, Harley and Sarah. And he's like, no, Nora. And Ben's like, oh. It's like, oh, the penny drops. And that's the where Colin's like, oh, yeah, no, but it's out now. Everyone knows it's totes cool. It's like, yeah, maybe that's. And first of all, don't say totes cool, Colin. Just don't. Just please don't. but yeah. So yeah, it's a really funny scene. But also it's interesting that Ben is like immediately like, oh, no, she has Slappy. And so he is heading off to investigate. And we're going to take a little break so you can investigate our sponsors and what offers they are giving us. We'll be right back.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
I need to go.
Hang on. It is our time. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back. And we're back with the gang, too. Inside the house, Isaiah is telling Nathan it's weird that nobody noticed he was possessed. And Nathan explains he's in a transitional phase, which Lucas interprets as him being a loser, which Nathan immediately denies and says also hurtful. They ask how long he's been in there, and he says he doesn't really know. Time's lost on meaning in there, but it's been since the night of Isaiah's entry. They're all like, yeah, a long time. And he says it's hard because he's been dealing with some extreme existential dread and trying to find a way out of the weird purgatory house. Isabella tells him to buck up and give them an inspirational teacher speech. So he does, like in class, they just start unpacking. And they start like going through what they know, and they realize that they're really trapped inside Biddle's mind. You know, it's the scrapbook has done it, but Nathan has been possessed. And so they're all kind of inside Biddle's mind right now. Isaiah says if there's a way in, there has to be a way out. And Isabella notices a light coming from underneath the door and says she thinks she found one as she opens it and sees a light some distance below them in the void.
Yeah, I love this like desire for like a Dead Poet Society moment. I haven't seen Rudy, so I didn't get that reference, but that was like the movie. The classic teacher speech is like goes across several movies, but Dead Poet Society is what I thought of.
Yeah, because they all like someone's like Rudy, like oh Captain, my Captain. Jerry's like even a little live, laugh, love moment. You know, they're like just something inspirational. And it's funny because they all kind of like gather around and like they're sitting there waiting for him. They're like, finally, we have an adult with us. And Nathan does okay. He's not necessarily great, but also poor Nathan has been stuck inside this weird purgatory house for weeks by himself. Time has lost all meaning for him, and the kids are all like, but and he's like floundering a little bit. They're like, come on, you're the adult. It's like, I chill. I think like he should be like, first of all, first thing you should learn, adults do not have all the answers, kids. I appreciate the confidence, but yeah so yeah he's like, I'm old, you have young front of mind. He's like, it's like this is a riffing situation. I'm setting stuff up. I need your young fertile minds to help me. So yeah, it's a really funny sequence. But at least Isabella discovering the doorway into the darkness, having some light down below. And they realize it's like another room. It's like another room down there. So she decides that she's going to go into it. So the gang starts trying to cobble together curtains into a lifeline to lower her down to light. Isaiah, of course, objects because anytime a woman wants to do something possibly like scary or dangerous, Isaiah is going to white knight it and object. But and also he says he thinks that Daredevil Lucas should do it because he's always doing dumb crap like that. Which, how much of that is him wanting to protect Isabella? To get rid of Lucas? I think there's like a 50-50 split between the motivations there. But Lucas is like, as a guy who does this dumb crap all the time, I'm on board with her doing it. And Nathan is on Isaiah's side and starts trying to be the voice of reason as the adult in the room. We cannot do this. And we should all just basically accept our fates and just get to know each other and play some charades, which basically convinces all the kids to move forward with Isabella's plan and lure into the darkness. Lucas apparently had a bad experience with charades once.
Yeah. This is all funny. I loved James's, first of all, being silent as partial solidarity, which was very funny. In what world are there enough curtains in this house for considering how far down we see this drop? But okay, fine, whatever. But I loved this, like, yeah, jump into this abyss or play charades for all eternity. And there was no hesitation at all. They're like, no, we got to do this.
Yep, even Isaiah, just like, okay, yeah. When you put it like that, let's throw Isabella into the yawning abyss. So they lower her down, and when she reaches the light, she suddenly finds herself in the school hallway with a picture of Hillary's husband on the wall, indicating that it's the 90s. She finds Harold's locker filled with his drawings, and she hears laughter and falls into the auditorium, which is filled with puppet people who all start laughing. When I say puppet people, it's like the people who are transformed by the spell. It's like Harold's parents, or Ephraim's manager that we saw, but it's like a whole auditorium filled with people who've been transformed into puppets, and they all start laughing at her. And so she runs back to the curtain rope and tugs on it to get pulled up. Then we cut to the real world, where Biddle Brat is tearing a piece of paper off the scrapbook picture of the hallway to spit some gum into it, and the scrapbook version of the hallway begins to crumple as he crumples the paper. Isabella gets pulled free just in time, but as the gang kind of slip and lose their footing, Nathan slams the doorframe and disappears from the house and finds himself back in his body driving the car. He looks in the rearview mirror, sees Harold's reflection, and suddenly is back in the scrapbook house just as the gang finally gets Isabella back inside. There's a lot happening in this sequence.
Yeah, for sure. This whole like Biddle Mind Palace situation thing that I like don't totally understand, but I think it's fine. I didn't need to. Hated the auditorium of puppet people. That was bad. I could have done without that. It was fortunately so fast because I respected Isabella's reaction to this so much. She like sees this and she's like, nope. And she like got out of there so fast. There was no like, what's going on here? I should investigate and look around and see what, and no. She was like, this is bad. I gotta go. And so she like ran so quickly, which I thought was so great. This was all really interesting. And then with like Nathan like slamming in and out, that whole discovery I thought was sort of an interesting way for how that happened. But yeah, what did you think of this whole thing? It was like a really interesting, like the dropping down to the other room. Like it just felt very creative. It wasn't like anything like I was really expecting from this when they got stuck in the scrapbook. I wasn't expecting there to be like other rooms and things.
Yeah, it's not what I was expecting to be in the light. I wasn't really thinking about it. And it makes sense, though. If they're in the scrapbook, then the other things they see is going to be another room in the scrapbook. So in hindsight, it makes sense. But I guess in the moment, I was thinking more of them being inside Biddle's mind. Mm-hmm. So I was maybe expecting it to be like a memory or something, which, to be fair, a lot of stuff that we saw when they first went to the scrapbook were his memories. Like the scrapbook is his way to like capture his memories and project his memories into other people. But it wasn't fully a memory because Isabella even says it's almost like it was the past, but also like the future. So she was taking the puppet people to be, this is what Biddle's plans are. This is maybe what Slappy is wanting to do, is like transform everyone into his puppets. That's kind of what she was getting from it. Because that line, it's also kind of the future, was like a really interesting one to me. Because I didn't necessarily get that. I thought it was just like creepy for creepy's sake. But it could be part of this is what the big plan is. But I really like the sequence of the crumpling of the paper causing the hallway itself to crumple down. I thought that was like a really neat thing. And then, whenever Nathan slammed to the doorway and then disappeared, I was not ready for that. That I was not expecting that. So that was fun. My one complaint with Nathan going back to his body is every time it happens, he takes way too long before he tries to do anything. He's like too
midway. Yeah.
Oh, I'm back in my body. Oh, what's going, you know, and like, dude, have some urgency here. We'll talk about that more in future scenes.
Yeah, for sure. It was like some urgency and stop looking in the rearview mirror. That seems bad.
Yeah. Also, I got to say, the fact that he did not like crash the car when he slammed back into his own body is like a miracle. Because I can only imagine like something being in your body and just like, what, what's going on? I would have been like swerving all over the road. The fact that it didn't happen that way, all I can guess is that Harold still had some control over the body at that point, since we see that Harold is still present and has some control. But I was like, if that happened to me, I would have been swerving all over the place. Suddenly found myself someplace where I wasn't expected to be after I'd just been like yanked off my feet and slammed into a doorway, especially.
Yeah, I would have expected at least a swerve. But I guess we're lucky that Harold seems to have his learner's permit or something.
Yeah. So we cut then to Ben and Eliza as they go to the mines so they can see if Slappy's case is still there. Ben heads inside while Eliza waits in the car. Ben climbs on a rope into the pit and discovers the case is gone. Then we discover that not all of James' dupes got splatted because the James dupe appears and taunts Ben, dropping down the rope so that he can't get out. Outside, Eliza sees the filthy dupe and jumps to the conclusion that James has been sleeping there, turning the mine into a drug den. James is like, oh no, you're the one with the substance abuse problem, not me. And then he picks up a log and attacks her. But Ben flying tackles him from behind, and Eliza then splats the dupe and admits, you know, maybe Nora had a point.
Where did Ben come from? Ben was trapped in a mine. The rope gets lowered, and then suddenly he's there to save the day. First of all, I loved the whole that you call out Isaiah for white knighting, and then we get to Eliza's family's mine that she's probably been to before, and Ben's like, wait here, I'll go inside. And I was like, oh, like father like son with this. But then he gets trapped and then suddenly like appears all of a sudden. I was like, where did you come from?
I just have to think that the dupe thought that Ben wouldn't be able to scale the sides of the mine without the rope. I think the rope would have made it easier, but I think Ben was probably just able to like climb the sides of the pit. It wasn't the same pit that the others were trapped in. It was a different pit. So I just think Ben is probably athletic, more athletic than James, probably able to like maybe do some rock climbing in his spare time. Who knows? But I think, he just was able to like probably just scale the pit wall. That was my headcanon for it. Cause him popping up was like surprising, but also like, you threw the rope down, but I don't know if that was a deep enough pit where someone who was like, athletically skilled would be completely trapped down there.
Yeah. Or maybe cause he'd been down there before, he like knew of another way out or something, but it was still a bit of like, I was like, where did you come from? I loved the return of the creepy duplicate Jameses. Like we shouted out, this performance in the episode, but they're so much fun. I think they're played so well. And then I absolutely like cheered when Eliza like so quickly was like, you're not James. Like, I love that how quickly she picked up on that was like some sort of mom instinct of just like, you look exactly like my kid, but I've seen creepy dolls talk in the past. So I know supernatural stuff is real and like, you're not him. I thought that was so good. And then, then just like to be the one to like splat it all after, I thought was very funny.
Yeah. And the dupe even like makes a comment about Slappy as he's like approaching her. He's like, you never should have taken Slappy from him or something along those lines. So I want to point that out. Like the dupes are like completely all in, all knowledge about what's going on with all of this. Then we go back to the scrapbook and Nathan is just like, hey, can somebody hit me? And they're like, why? It's like, I'm trying to test something out, you know? And Isabella gladly obliges and he pops back into his body briefly. When he comes back and tells them he was in the car with the scrapbook, Margot realizes that he can free them by writing them out of the book. They approach him, ready to send him back, and they nervously ask him not to get slap happy and to plan their helpful hits so it's not just a bunch of chaotic swings. I really like the beginning of the scene when it's like, can someone hit me? And Isaiah's like, yeah, sure. It's like, oh, not you, you. And he points to James, and James like, uh-uh. And then Isabella just like whaps him. Like, Isabella has some rage. We know Isabella has rage. It's come up before. So her being the one willing to like punch him makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, her punch and then the like stretching and like limbering up in the next scene. It was super funny.
Yeah. So I think here's where we get like a little brief sequence of Nora getting a call from Sarah and her just hanging up and then like getting to a store. Then we cut back into the scrapbook. Isabella is limbering up, which makes Nathan very, very nervous. And Luke is like, "You'll be fine, Nathan. He has, since he's our teacher, can they please just call him Mr. Brat?" At which point Isabella decks him and sends him back into his body, where he discovers the car is parked and he sees Nora exiting the store and he tries to get her attention, but Harold takes over his hand and punches him back into the house. And he tells the kids what he saw, and Lucas says he thinks he knows where his mom is heading. And then he's a little anxious about Biddle following Nora, so then he punches Nathan back into the real world again.
The punching, the fact that he needs to get punched either way, I guess I hadn't really clued in. It seemed like Harold was taking him back over in the previous scenes, but this one it was like, wait, has he been punching himself this whole time to like snap back into the scrapbook too?
I think most of the time Harold has just been sending him back. But I think my headcanon here is that Nathan is fighting it more now, and so he can't just send him back. And so now this time he had to punch him back. It's like every time he gets sent back, he's getting a little bit more control over his body. And so it's getting harder and harder for Harold to actually send him back. Cause then we have the next scene where he can't even send him back at all as they're struggling. So I think it's just every time he's getting sent back, it's eroding Harold's control over him. It's kind of how I headcanoned that thing. Plus, I just think, Harold taking control of his own fist to make him punch himself and to go back was a pretty funny little thing. Because Nathan pops back into the house. He's rubbing his jaw. He's just oh, come on. And then after Lucas punches him, he's back in the car again. Do you have to get so hard, Lucas?
Yeah, it was great.
But so he's back in the real world, back in the car, and he grabs the scrapbook, but Harold starts to take over his body again, and they struggle, picking the book up, putting it down, picking the book up, putting it down, and then as they're struggling, the scrapbook goes flying out of the car window and falls into a puddle, and we see the ink start to bleed out of the picture of the kids in the house, and we cut to the inside of the scrapbook, and the color starts to bleed from the walls around the gang, and water starts to drip on them, and suddenly they all drop through the floor at once. And that's the end of our episode.
Yeah, this show does this well. This reminded me of the James duplicate getting all splatted at the end of the second episode, where I'm like, wait, what's going on? And I was like, oh, now I want to watch the next episode. I want to know. So this show does a really good job of gripping you in and making you want to watch the next one, which is why I think it's going to play so well on a binge for people, because I think they're just going to want to keep watching, and that's going to be very satisfying to be able to just plow through all of them in a weekend, or I was gonna say maybe even a day if you could just sit for that long.
For me, I would definitely have gone through this in a day if I had access to all of them and did not have to podcast about them. I would have eaten this up if it was all available. I agree. I think that the show does cliffhangers pretty well. Not every episode is a cliffhanger, but most of the time when they do a cliffhanger, it's definitely something that makes you want to go into the next one to see what's going on. I really like the sequence of the color draining out of the walls. The way it does, it's almost like water is running down the walls, but it's more like this effect of the walls losing color, kind of these streaks, almost like water, and then actual water starts dripping in, and then it's like, okay, now it's dissolved the floor out beneath them, and they're all just falling. So are they going to be falling into the abyss? Are they going to fall into another page? Are they going to fall back into their bodies? Biddle doesn't realize that's what's going to happen when he destroys the scrapbook, because we just don't know. Destroying the room, is it going to hurt them or is it going to free them? We just don't know at this point. So I did in the previous scene, the fact that Lucas heard about the store, and so he knows where his mom is going. So once they get out of the book, they're going to know, okay, we're guessing she's going to her family's cabin that she mentioned as a teen, but where she wanted to go to take Slappy. So that's more than likely where she's headed. So the gang will, once they get out of the book, they'll all be on their way there. I think it's really sets up the next episode nicely.
Yeah. Although I love that he knows where she's going because he mentioned that she was at a convenience store and he's like, I know exactly which. And I was like, okay, sir, there's more than one convenience store. Your mom could just be at a different convenience store, but like give like a single other note about this so that Lucas can be like, I know that convenience store. That was it. It was just a bit wild to me that he's like, yeah, she's at this convenience store. And he's like, I know where she is. I was like, how? How do you know where she is from that? Fine. Also, Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden to play at the episode was also a great needle drop. So that was really good.
Yeah, it paired really well with the freakiness of the walls melting. Not as freaky as the actual Black Hole Sun music video, which is incredibly weird, bizarre, freaky music video, but still kind of weird and freaky.
There we go. But yeah, I'm excited. The last three episodes, I feel like, again, yeah, if we weren't podcasting about this, I would just like binge them all in one go, I think, at this point. I'm like very curious to like just see where this goes and wrap up the story. And it's like, it's happening fast. I can't believe we only have three episodes left. But I guess, again, like dropping five episodes at once will do that.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely burned through this first five really quickly. And now we have the, I have to wait a week. I have to wait a week. I have to wait a week. So... as soon as we're done here.
Yeah. So we've gotten a book comparison this week, right? We had said Give Yourself Goosebumps was like a tagline for the books, but not actually a book itself.
Yeah. And the whole choose your own adventure thing of it didn't really come into play here. But it is them trying to figure their way out of the book. So I think that's kind of like a semi-thematic tie-in to like a choose your own adventure, trying to get your way through the story. So it kind of ties in a little bit, not a lot, but I can see like a little bit of a thing there. But next week's is based on the book. And the title of that book is You Can't Scare Me.
Cool. So yeah, I was going to ask. Because I know the last two are also based on books, right? So we've got like...
So yes and no. The next episode and the one after that are both based on books. The last one is based off of a series of books, but the actual title of it is not the title of any one of the books about the subject. I'm planning on reading the first book about that that topic, but there's nothing actually titled that. What the last episode title is, but there is like a whole spin-off series based off of that as well. So
cool.
Just being very cryptic here. Yeah. People can look it up on IMDb if they're interested, I guess, to see what we're talking about. But next episode is based on a book which I have read, and it's called You Can't Scare Me. So any thoughts on what the next episode is going to be about?
Yeah. So I think first of all, like the immediate question is like what we think is going to happen of them falling through the floor like this. And I don't know if you feel like you can weigh into that because it, you know, I assume it's not anything related to the book that you read.
Not even remotely.
Yeah. I think my theory is that they will like pop back into their real lives. I don't know that we need like another, we already did the whole like flashback episode to Harold's life. So I don't think we need to like explore more memories or anything like that. So I think it's going to be like, this is how they end up getting out. And now they're on the quest to like, go find Nora. And I think again, we keep expecting Slappy to pop up at the ends of these episodes and he doesn't, but I'm going to say again, Slappy appears at the end of this episode in the main timeline. That's like the tag at the end of this episode is that, Slappy somehow gets like put back together during this episode and is somehow Biddle manages to like get him back in one piece, and then that is like Slappy is talking by the end of this episode. That is my prediction. I have no idea how the title of You Can't Scare Me is gonna like work into this, but yeah, Slappy's in one piece by the end of the episode.
I'm on board with that prediction. We've been burned before by this prediction, but I think this makes, again, we were burned before because we knew what the name of the next episode was going to be. And this time, again, we know what the name of the episode after this is going to be. It's, I mean, it's Night of the Living Dummy 2, you know? So No need to be coy about that one. I don't think at this point we've already mentioned that it was going to be an episode coming up. But so it makes sense to have the next episode be how he gets brought back, and then the next episode of that be him in full power. Because it would be strange, I feel, to only have like one episode of the season of Slappy together in the present as a menace. Mm-hmm. I feel like Night of Living Dummy 2 really needs to have Slappy there as a menace. They're having to fight a bit leading up to like the final confrontation in the last one. Again, we could be wrong, but it makes sense for him to, even if it's just like his eyes popping open at the very end of the next episode, that makes sense to me. I have zero idea how the episode is going to tie into the book. I can't even begin to guess how it's going to tie into the book. I'll just say that, because the book is not like most of the other books that have inspired things. It's not really based around any sort of cursed object type situation like the others were. I can maybe think of the ways it might tie in, but it's very different structurally than some of the others. So I just don't know. So I'm very curious to see if it is just a connection in name only, or if there is like some of the themes of what actually happened in that book brought into the show. I don't really know how that can happen, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And so do you have a theory on where they go basically from this episode to get washed out of the room?
I like the idea of, I both do and don't like the idea of, by him throwing the scrapbook in the water, it frees them. I like it because, like, okay, we don't have to have another episode spent of them like going through trying to rescue themselves. But at the same time, it feels really easy. You know, it feels a little too easy for them to, like, it feels like a bit of a cheat for the cliffhanger to be like, oh no, they're in trouble, and then it'd be resolved by them, oh no, they're in their bodies. That feels a little cheap. And so while part of me wants them to do that so we don't have to deal with like a lot more scrapbook shenanigans, a part of me would like really not like that, because it feels like one of those sort of like you're watching things like The Amazing Race, like, oh no, this team's in trouble, go to commercial, and then trouble's resolved immediately as soon as you get back to the commercial break. You know, that always feels really cheap of a way of like trying to get people to keep watching, even though you know that it's not going to be anything. So a part of me hopes that they are still in the scrapbook. I wouldn't mind them like popping through a couple more of Harold's memories. I know that we got the full episode of that, but they just like popped into a couple of things, because we still have like that little gap of like, why was he so scared before he accepted things? If they were like popped into the memory of what happened there, I would be all for them like doing that. But then the question is, how do they actually get out of the book at that point? So I'm leaning towards they're just falling back in their bodies, but part of me hopes that there is something more to it.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. And I wouldn't be surprised if you're right, if we sort of get like one scene or something, and then they manage to get out, and then they go after Nora, and that's like sort of their time. And meanwhile, Nora and the other adults are like getting to her cottage, and Slappy ends up getting back together. Like those two things are happening at the same time. Yeah, I think this show has like done enough to earn my trust in that it's like, I think it's going to be interesting in the way that they do it. I find that they are usually making good choices, and every now and then they do stuff that I'm like, what's happening here? But for the most part, I think that they're telling a really interesting story, and it feels very thought out, and it feels like there's lots of threads happening. And I'm kind of excited to see, now that we're approaching the end, like, where are those tying up, and how is everything making sense together? And I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, but yeah, like a little bit just to explain that kind of question that we had, or give us like some extra piece of information about Slappy that's going to become useful for them later or something. Like I wouldn't be surprised if that's the way that it goes. I wasn't thinking it was going to be that when I watched it, but in retrospect, that seems like a fun way to do it.
Yeah. So my question is, do you think that Victoria is ever going to wake up and accept that supernatural things are happening? Do you think that she'll listen to Ben and Eliza if they try to tell her? Or is she going to be like in full on denial and not try to help at all? Or is she going to swoop in the last minute in the last episode to save the day suddenly? That's my big question mark here is like, is Victoria ever going to redeem herself?
Yeah, I definitely think that she has to, we have to get all of the grown-ups. We've got to get Victoria and Sarah like joining the rest of them at the cottage somehow. And you know what? Sometimes some of us are reluctant to come up with supernatural explanations for things that we experience, even if we're just like watching shows that we try to like rationalize and make sense of. And so I understand where she's coming from as someone who, you know, she clearly went to medical school and is spent a lot of time very focused on like evidence-based experience, you know, research and practice. So I get it. I get why she's been resistant to it. But yeah, she is going to have to wake up and figure it out and follow along at some point. So yeah, I'm hoping that that happens in this episode so that she can be on board and carry forward.
Yeah, that's the hope, but I'm not super hopeful. But yeah. So now's the point where I talk about a horror recommendations based on the episode. This one was a little harder because it's like a little strange, but with them all being trapped inside of the Biddle house, I decided to just kind of go with like haunted house movies. It's kind of like where my brain went to after watching this. So these are like some haunted house, haunted location movies that I think are really good. The first one is kind of like the most well-known, because also one of the best like haunted house stories ever. And that's The Haunting of Hill House. And I'm talking about the novel written by Shirley Jackson from 1959. The novel is excellent. And then it was made into an excellent movie in this 1963 called just The Haunting. It's black and white. It is an amazing, amazing movie. It is very much more like psychological horror in a lot of ways. It's like just more like feelings and vibes and creepiness more than like jump scare gore stuff. But it's really well done. And then there was also the excellent Netflix series, The Haunting of Hill House, which is like very loosely inspired by the novel, but it is really well done. All of Mike Flanagan's stuff is really good. Notice I did not mention the 1990s version of The Haunting of Hill House called The Haunting with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Owen Wilson. It is not very good. Just don't even bother with that. A couple others. There's another movie that's kind of along the same lines. It's like actually kind of really similar in the general idea of like people going to investigate a haunted house. It's The Legend of Hell House. It had Roddy McDowall in it. It's from 1973. It's based on Richard Matheson's novel, Hell House. It's really well done. Then, of course, there's The Shining, both the novel and the film. And Stephen King, very notably, hates Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining. Stephen King hates that because it changed the themes of the book. I love The Shining, the novel. It is my favorite Stephen King novel. I love the movie The Shining as well. It's probably my favorite Stanley Kubrick film. And I love both of their works completely. So the fact that I saw the movie before I read the book might have a little to do with how I can separate them, but I think they're both just excellent. And then my final two recommendations are two movies that are both called House. The first one is 1986's House. It's an American horror comedy film. It's a movie that I rented countless times as a kid. It's about a writer who goes to live in his family home after his mother dies and is like the house is haunted. And it's really, really creepy, has some like really, you know, scary stuff in it, but also is really, really funny. And then the last one I'm going to recommend is also called House, or at least that's the American title. The Japanese title is Houseu. It's a 1977 experimental comedy film. And it's one of the most bizarre things you're ever going to see. So if you really like bizarre, surreal, dream logic stuff, you want to see like ghost cats and killer pianos and a group of girls whose names reflect their personalities. You have like the musical Melody and the athletic Kung Fu and the dreamer Fantasy, who all go to this house for vacation and then one by one fall prey to the evil witch ghost in the house. It is an amazing fever dream of an experience, and I love it.
Amazing. I think that that's a great kind of thematic tie for all of those for this episode. So thank you so much, Todd. Do you have anything to plug? Where can people find you? What other podcasts you got going on right now?
Yeah, so you can find me most social media platforms at Librarian Todd, because Todd Librarian has too many characters. Still going strong over on One Indescribable Podcast, where Adam H., TV Lindy, and I are continuing our coverage of Girls 5 Eva. We just had Melissa on, and by the time you're hearing this, I think our next episode is about to come out with the wonderful Emily is joining us to talk about the next episode of that.
Amazing. You can follow me on Twitter, MelissaW28, MelissaWoodward28 on other social media. And I am talking right now Lessons in Chemistry with Dr. Amanda. I'm talking Doctor Who with Adam and Kevin. I'm talking Burrows and Dimension 20's D&D show with Rich. We just recorded our second episode of that earlier today, and it was such a great conversation. If you're at all a D&D person, I highly recommend checking it out. The first episode of Burrows End is available on YouTube for free if you don't have that Dropout subscription yet. And otherwise, I was on the season 2 wrap up for Wheel of Time, and on Talking Girls 5 Eva with Todd and Adam and Lindy, and that was super fun, and you should check that out. It's always nice that they're kind of early in a new show, so you can kind of jump in and catch up really quick because they're short episodes. So and I've now, this is now the second show that I am watching because you all are covering it, so that's always been great. And yeah, you can catch us here talking episode 8 of Goosebumps. We are like in the final act, I think, of this show. And I'm very excited. I'm very happy with how much I'm enjoying it, having a great time talking to you, Todd, and looking forward to hearing everybody's feedback. Keep talking to us in the Discord. Send us any questions you have, any theories, whatever you've got. We'd love to talk about them. And we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.